Black Beauty last night because Charlie was over and we wanted to watch a horse movie, and it was good. It starts out with Sean Bean birthing a horse.
Oh.
Now.
Oh.
Wait.
Okay. Did it hurt him?
Yeah.
No, he just helped. He was there to help.
Oh, like, okay.
It was,
okay.
They never explained it.
They showed it. It was intense.
Huh.
You kick, and you catch him, like, in the solar plexus.
That's two!
He stretches out a little bit, and he steps forward to you again, goes, all right, you got one more.
Okay, I'm going to bump my dice pool a little bit. So, then I'm adding a blue die for duel list.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you...
What else? It's
you can go berserk. Oof.
I don't think that's appropriate.
It is a question so. Either frustration or pride. I could see having you like tip yourself a little bit into it might be fun, but also if you don't want to do that, that is fine.
Do whatever you've got to do.
I've got one punch. I think adding a blue is more than enough there.
Okay.
So he's standing. Gable gets up there, grabs... he took off his shirt. Never mind. Oh, does he have a beard?
He doesn't have a beard. He does have long hair, which I think your kick, one of the things your kick did, like he had pulled his hair back into a tight ponytail. Like you hit him so hard that the hair tie exploded off the back of his head. And so now he has this long braided strands of these red and rainbow locks hanging down.
Okay. Gable gets him up, grabs him by the hair, pulls him close, and says to him, the thing about jokes is that everyone's supposed to be laughing. Is anyone laughing? Hmm? And he throws him back and then winds back for the first punch. That is 3 successes and 3 advantages.
Get it.
Hell yes. So, at this, that is another 6 damage, but I'm pulling out my dice now.
My dice.
So he gets punched, and I think you're going to get him like right in his nose. And Gable like has punched plenty of people in the nose before. And that is, and the reason Gable goes for that is the nose is a little bit more comfortable on the knuckles than the rest of the face. And it's super satisfying to punch someone in the face, but it's not comfortable if you like hit their cheek and like the bone hurts your knuckles or whatever. It also doesn't look cool afterwards. So you catch him in the nose, and his nose is like stone as well. You know, there's the softness of flesh, but everything else about him is unyielding. And he stumbles back from that. And there's a moment where it looks like he's going to waver, but he doesn't waver. And he stands firm. And now,
with 3
you're
successes?
In a for real fight.
That's 3.
Okay.
3 hits.
Well. Get the count out of here.
Is also on the ship.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I'm from another ship. The ship that is exclusively Muppets. Anime Muppets.
Anime Muppets.
Ku is going to reel back. And he like takes kind of a hunched posture. Like he looks less and less like a person and more like a snarling wild animal. And you can see his eyes unfocus, and it feels like his hair almost flares a little bit. Like, you know those moments in Miyazaki movies where like their hair just like flutters out? Like, you can feel this power emanating from him, and it looks as if the woad tattoos have like a bit of bioluminescence to them, but like his eyes look up at you and they're wildly unfocused, and Gable, you can tell that this is almost like looking into your eyes when you're in the middle of the battle dance.
Can I offer something real quick?
Oh yeah.
So as that happens, the crew goes, oh.
Yeah, there's that big howl, and he dashes forward. And he is gonna miss with a threat, so... Gable, how are you outmaneuvering him right now?
Well, you're saying that he's like building up strength as if he's kind of like a rubber band that got pulled and is shooting forward?
Yeah.
Or like a bunch of potential energy. I think what happens is Gable has enough time after the punch, because he's winding up for too long, to kind of use his momentum against him. So... they bring a shoulder down and kind of flip him over, which I'm sure he just lands on his feet, but there's no real damages had.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you ready? Like, you step into it, which, like, stutters his momentum a bit enough to catch him with that elbow, and he does use that to, like, spring and propel himself over, but, like, he's landed awkwardly. So you are going to have a blue die against him for your next attack, which it is time for you to roll right now.
The Hound of Calais.
And what is it going to be against now? Is it going to be two or three?
It's two now. Purples. Because he is now defending himself as the fight has started.
Okay, I'm going to roll and then I'm going to see what happens.
Yeah, let's just see what happens.
Somebody dies. That is three successes and three threats.
Okay, yes. All right, so you have now done 9 damage. What does this attack look like?
So he's behind me?
Yeah, he's behind you.
Okay.
He's behind you and like still crouched down, maybe a 3-point anime landing, but it looks unbalanced.
Gable is going to do an elbow down, kind of like wrestling style slammed elbow down into his neck.
Oh, yeah.
Just and then pin him down.
Yeah. That is it. I think, like, you bring that elbow down and, like, Gable being 7 feet tall, Gable being an absolute tower of muscle, like, Gable comes down and Gable comes down hard. And, like, there is an audible, oh, from the crowd, like, hearing that. and you think... that might have been it. That might have been the finish. Because, like, you got your weight on him and you don't feel anything for a second. He still felt tough. Like, it doesn't feel like falling on someone in the wind, getting fully knocked out of them. But, like, he's not moving right now. So that might have been all he had. And then suddenly, like, again... if you go to touch a cat's soft belly, like sometimes it's just a fun time for both you and the cat and you really enjoy yourself. And sometimes you put your hand down and suddenly there is an alive thresher that is going to shred your hand and sort of closes around you and brings you in. This is one of those moments where suddenly you feel the upper half of your body enveloped by the odd, like, sort of bestial contortions that this man is capable of. and he like maneuvers himself above you. And so now he is pinning you down with his knees, standing above you, or not even standing, like crouching above you with this unfocused, like berserker look in his eye. And we're going to roll for his attack here. He does. Wow. It's a good thing that he has his automatic success, huh? And he's also got a pin down. Okay. So he rolls very poorly. Yeah, he's got an automatic success because he's berserking Gable, but you've also been getting automatic successes against him after he started berserking.
Oh, that's nice.
He hits you by one, but it does look like he's got four advantages, which is just not enough to trigger a crit against you, which was what I was hoping for. Mm-mm. So he... what's the best way to do this? Oh, yeah. He is kneeling on your shoulders, like above you, and his hands are like curled into claws. He slams at the ground on either side of your head and then brings his head down to touch his forehead to your forehead. And you feel like this gong of power as your heads connect, and you've got 6 damage coming at you.
Jeebus creepus. But that's the first damage I've taken, so that's fine.
That's the first damage you've taken.
It's fine. So I've got 2 arms pinned?
Yeah. His knees are on your shoulders. So, like, your arms aren't exactly pinned.
Oh, so my hands are free.
Your hands are free.
All right. I'm going to roll, and if I do good, I'm going to tell you what it is.
And if I do bad, I'm going to lie about what I got.
That would be so easy to do, though. And the fact that no one has done that in 2+ years, people.
I kind of think it would be hard. Like, looking at these dice, I'm always like, what the fuck is going on? Like, lying
about
the results.
3 successes, 2 threats,
like,
done.
This is a success and an advantage, and I think I know what it is and how it works.
Ooh.
Because Gable has an arm free.
Well, it's 2 successes and an advantage.
2 successes and an advantage. Okay. Because they have a hand free and his head is so close to me, they're going to do a mandible. So they're going to stick their hand in his mouth and then press down on his lower mandible, which cuts off blood supply,
nasty.
I believe. And so just holding that as a submission move.
It hurts a lot if someone does that to you.
Mm-hmm. So they pull it through and get like their fingies in his mouth and start pressing down.
Ooh. Yeah. So that's 5 damage. Okay. He has 1 hit point left. So he is in this submission hold. I think, like, that is enough to, like, pull yourself back from him, like, scoot out from being underneath his weight because, like, he's off balance or whatever. And again, you know, this is an animal, a dog that you've taken by the mouth. When someone hits a pressure point like that, they can't just bite down on your fingers. Mm-hmm. Just for our listeners who might not know that about fighting. We're going to do his last roll here. You've got an advantage, so I'm going to give him a black die. Okay. All right.
No.
All right, Koo.
No.
All right, Koo.
He's the worst.
So Koo, for a while, is like kind of a snarling beast swinging at you. And there's a little bit of a element of you hold a large person holding their head on a small person who's just swinging their arms because you're bigger than this person and you've got them in this pressure point. So it like, he can't get at you and he's not thinking clearly. He is a snarling beast right now. Then he snarls at you for a little bit, and you can tell he doesn't have much left to give here. He's fading a little bit because the pressure is building up too much, and his swings are getting weaker. But he suddenly jumps and like forms himself like a ball around your arm. And he's just like hanging off of your arm in the air for a second. Then he shoots his feet out and kicks you squarely in the jaw, doing,
oof,
doing 7 damage with a crit.
Fuck.
As he has rolled a triumph here.
Holy hell.
Then I'm through wound, and now I'm in strain.
Have you been reducing it by your brawn this whole time? Because you do have soak. You must remember your soak. So you have to remove 3 from each of those
hits.
You
must remember the soak.
Okay, 3 and 2. So it's only 5. Oh, yeah, then I'm fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
You know, if they die, this was well worth the silver piece.
Who are you talking to?
Whoever will listen.
Who's ever around?
I feel like there's a whole part of the crew that's like sitting around Travis, like just hanging on his words as they all talk.
Oh, snake.
Oh, what's it like not having feet?
So yeah, these two feet like connect with your jaw. It feels like you've been hit by a bull. It sends you driving back, pulls your fingers and your grip out of his mouth. He springs back and like moves into a growl, and you are dizzy and off balance. He is swirling in your vision. You do have a single black die to your next check. But this should be your last check as well.
Okay. Fingers crossed, you know? Black dye. Okay. All right. Gable gets kicked in the jaw, spins around, is knocked over like a table and grabs it, hoists himself up, sees if there's anyone around them with a thing of ale, grabs the ale, drinks it, and then wheels around to hit Koo with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2 success and an advantage.
So this like wooden tankard sails through the air in your fist and smashes against Koo's forehead. The remnants of beer spray into the air. A single cut forms on his head as you finally pierced his skin. And he drops to the ground. Looks like he's going to fall down, but falls down onto a single knee, kind of like bowed in front of Gable, and looks up and goes, "Aye, Mr. Gable, I would be honored to marry you." And then falls out unconscious.
Oh.
And the room explodes in cheering. And finally chanting, "The snake is on the crew! The snake is on the crew! The snake is on the crew!" People come around shoving glasses in Gable's face, and you know there is celebration to be had. The hurly-gurdies start up again, and there is singing and lots of celebration to be had. You're there for a little bit during all of this. Travis, you transform back from a snake to a man.
I'm trying to decide if I want to have some privacy or if I want to make a show of it. It's also interesting that like all of these people know.
And our crew does.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose I'll make a show of it. You know how, have you ever seen that thing where snakes kind of play dead and they sort of writhe around?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do that. And scream a lot.
There is one of the suggestions of the type of snake that you could be that the audience made is there's a type of snake that will do that fake writhing around and will pee and shit itself and then vomit blood to make predators go away.
Oh, the vomiting and blood
there
is
There is
very
something
good.
That wow. feels very Travis about that wow. move. Yeah.
I'm so mad because it's my little time right now, and he's trying to steal my attention. I'm so pissed off.
You just defended like our honor, and then Travis is like, "Also, I'm here."
I'm gonna throw up. I'm gonna throw up for attention.
Yeah, and I think he does that, and just you know screams and writhes, and then. How many people are here total?
It's not the whole crew, but yeah. it's a good, I'd say there's like 50 to 100 people.
I guess my real question is like, how crazy would it be for Travis to be like, first round is on me?
Oh, not crazy at all.
Okay.
Not crazy at all.
Yeah. Then the writhing, the transforming, he sort of stands up with a flourish and says, to celebrate, the first round is on me.
There is like another huge cheer from the audience. Like everybody then gathers around Travis.
The snake is on the crew. The snake is on the crew.
The snake was on the crew.
Peering through the crowd is like you're being surrounded in adulation. Travis, you can feel the gaze of the Morrigan. It lays on you like a cold shadow. And you can tell that as you were transforming, she was studying it. She just takes a quiet sip as she looks. But like, there is a clear look in her eye that like she has noticed what has happened and she's got things to say about it. Hey heroes, it's James, your game master, and welcome to the mid-roll. Let's get things started off with a radvertisement. This one comes to us from Chip Winter going out to Joe Thistle, and based on the content of this message, I think I should read it like this. Got a page recently that your birthday was on March 5th. Sorry for the late call back, took forever to find a payphone because Mrs. Letterman was out on holiday. Been having a delightful romp running around a magical version of London, solving mysteries for various deities and fantasy beings. Here's to Friday evenings at the Arcanus and copious more to come. From your soup-wielding idiot savant owner and operator of Gumption Gumshoe, LLC. I realize that takes place in London and maybe that wasn't the most appropriate, but it's a transatlantic accent. They call it that for a reason. Chip and Joe, I certainly hope you're enjoying your games, and I wish that all of your deities and various fantasy beings pay in advance. A big thanks to you both for supporting the show this week. Heroes, we are currently in the midst of Jonnet Week, a week-long celebration of everybody's favorite precocious 15-year-old seer savant. I don't want to discourage anyone by saying it's too late to get involved, but you're certainly not leaving yourself much time. If you'd like to know more about Jonnet Week and the rules for getting involved, head over to Twitter and follow at Jonnet Week or go to jonnetweek.tumblr.com. You can also check out the Jonnet Week 2021 hashtag to find all sorts of cool fan art and fan fiction based on our future captain. A huge thanks to everyone who's contributed stuff to that. Everyone here at Skyjack's headquarters has been loving what you're doing. Heroes, I wanted to note that soon we're going to be taking a bit of a break here on Skyjack's, though not a traditional sort of break. Our editor, Casey Tony, works incredibly hard every week to bring you the show on time. And he needs a bit of a break and an opportunity to get ahead of schedule so he's not constantly treading water to keep afloat. So we're giving Casey a week off to rest up, and then at least 1 week to get ahead of schedule on editing. In the meantime, the Skyjack's feed is going to go full steam ahead. We're going to be bringing you the All My Fantasy Skyjacks World Building Special. Aaron Catano Saez and Jeff Stormer from the All My Fantasy Children podcast are going to join us here and help us build out the world of Sphere. I guarantee it'll be entertaining, and it will introduce some enticing new lore to the world of Sphere. I believe this could be starting as soon as next week, but it's up to Casey to make the decision of when he wants to take the time. As always, you can follow us over on Campaign Pod on Twitter to get updates about this sort of thing. Finally, before we get back to the show, I want to take a quick moment and thank everyone who supports us on Patreon. We have got some good stuff coming your way. It is right now in the editing hopper, but I am so excited to share it with y'all. If you want to get in on that and all the other Skyjacks bonus content, just head to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and sign up to become a supporter. That support helps us keep this show coming to you every week, and it supports everyone on our staff. Thanks to everyone who's in the Patreon already, and everyone who's going to join up in the future. Now with all that out of the way, let's get back in the sky! There is this moment for revelry where the, you know, there's a thing about the crew of the glass that is the same on the crew of the Uhuru. And that is, this is a group of people that are steeped in so much bravado. Everyone jumps at the chance to jump over the side of the ship and do a 3-point anime landing here, as they do on the Uhuru. And even though there has been like this moment of discomfort between y'all, like, you have buried some kind of a hatchet here, because there is something deep inside of all of you that is connected. You are all corsairs, and you are all corsairs that are cut from a similar cloth. And you get to enjoy this. I want to cut quickly to Jonnet and Grace. Jonnet, after you threw up, I got to know what happened.
At this point, the throw up is like, it happens. And then Jonnet gets up and like he wipes his face like, don't worry about it. Happens all the time. Look, so... Out of game or out of character, This feels like something that the character that Jonnet wouldn't know yet. But the fact that this person is a focal point, it feels like that is somehow means more than just like, hey, this person is going to be in your future. Is there any indication that this is anything more than like, hey, our paths will cross again? Or is there something like more divine, or is there some kind of magic interfering with? Is that a perception or something?
The magic is just destiny. Grace O'Malley is the legendary pirate queen of Ireland. So, like, what she is in Sphere is a person who will come to command a Corsair ship that will be one of the ships that is at Jonnet's right hand when he goes to face the Mariner. You don't think Grace is an angel. You don't think Grace is a changeling. You don't think Grace is a seer. You don't think Grace is anything supernatural or more supernatural than just an incredible captain of a legendary ship.
Okay. Okay, cool. I should have asked that a little bit earlier. Okay.
Well, you weren't looking for that information and, you know, you only got one success.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then Johnny kind of just like recollects himself and gives like what are you doing later today?
Like, Johnny Kessler, are you about to ask me to step out?
I don't know. I mean, it feels like someone just got beat the F up in there. And it feels like, you know, business is wrapped up. and I'm going to hang out with some teens. You want to hang out?
She runs her fingers through her hair, pulling it back behind her ears, and smiles and goes, I, for some reason, despite the vomiting, I think I will.
Don't worry about it. That was only a little bit of vomit. It's fine.
I must say, I'm impressed. Not many men can play off vomiting. That's not an opening move most people can manage to sway around. I think you've done quite well for yourself. There's some bravery to that.
Hey, thanks. Yeah. Vomit is brave.
Let's not go that far.
You ever use one of those gliders?
Gliders? No.
No? Good. Me neither.
And with that, bells start to ring across Ungoni.
What does that mean time-wise?
That means the meeting is about to start, which also means your cool teen hangout is also about to start.
Hey, are you going to be at the meeting that the exchange going on today, tonight, soon, almost now?
It's supposed to be a part of my training. Brian, he's taken a bit of an interest in my future, as it were, or as it would be. But I think I'm 14. There's no use being 14 if you're going to show up to every meeting you're supposed to be at.
No. You should definitely do it. You should definitely do it. Awesome. You should totally do that. But we can do both. Because I'm. Have you ever doubt fired before? Because here's the thing. If you've got time and a little ambition and a quick change of breakaway clothing, I think we're gonna have a crazy afternoon.
And with that, like, we'll zoom out from those two kids as we look around the city of Ungoni. Bells start to ring, and more than that, there are these wind instruments, these like almost horns or trumpets that are on poles, and they're raised into the air in these particular places where the channeled winds around Ungoni blows through them, and there is this long droning horn call, letting everyone aboard each Tempest Armada and Uhuru ship, and those members of the Ungoni populace that want to check out the proceedings, that it is time for your ships to meet and begin their exchange. So we are going to cut to a square. A square in the middle of Ungoni that is a public gathering place. It's a bit like some of those old carved amphitheaters where there are seats that are also kind of stairs. And it's a bit of a theater in the round. Like, you could see that shopping stalls and whatnot might be set up here at different times, but it is all surrounding this stage where a forge has been set up. This forge has a tube attached to it that, again, like, snakes up and catches the wind. Wind is channeled into it, and coal is being shoveled into this furnace, and there is this pillar of fire coming out of it that is growing hotter and hotter. Even stepped back into the crowd of the amphitheater, you can feel a bit of the warmth from this. On one side of the stadium, the 200, I'm not going to put a number to it. Can't put a number to it. We'll never put anywhere between 200 and 40,000 people that are part of the crew of the Uhuru take the sides of the stands and, like, sit down. And important, like, captain's council processions of various Tempest Armada ships take the other side. The entire crew of the Uhuru fills one side, but, like, just representatives from most ships fill the other. And there's a ring of Ungoni locals and most importantly of the Ungoni locals, we can see the Uhi filter in. The Uhi are the elders in Ungoni. They are the people that keep the Sita trees. And they have their rank displayed on their hands and arms with hexagonal tattoos that wrap from their fingers around up their arms to display their skill, seniority, and wisdom. They proceed in as they have been given front row seats to what is about to unfold. There are also other important cultural dignitaries and leaders within the Ungoni community who have been given these front row seats. On the sides towards the back of like this theater in the round, on one side, we can see the crew of the Tempest, most notably Sifa and Leotoa, who are dressed again in fine regalia. And hopefully, through the proceeding, the Captain's Council of the Uhuru has met up with Orimar Vale. We can see Orimar once again in his fancy clothes. He is sporting an open-chested look, nodding to the Rakshari tradition. At his side is Bathroom Barry, who is looking extremely fine, if a little bit tired, because he has spent all day working on his musical. And, you know, he, like anything, he'll put his whole heart into it.
Mm-hmm.
Gable?
He's going to do like a Lin-Manuel Miranda at like the White House dinner, where he previews an excerpt from his musical at the after party of this meeting. So he's a lot on his mind.
Oh, bud.
I can't wait. I absolutely love that.
He's the only good character, really.
Gable, you have just come in from a fight, really. So what's your situation?
They've straightened their shirt and have managed to go get their sword and everything, but have very obvious like split lip and bruises. And I think if the captain's there, the captain just looks at them and shrugs his shoulders.
the captain looks, gives a shrug, and signs very quickly, "You're bleeding."
Gable gets a kerchief and just like holds it to their lip, like thumbs up.
He like looks around and signs, "Where's the Star Watcher?"
We've not discussed this part of the plan. I was under the impression Janet was going to start here. Seems not.
Well, that's the thing. Tyler, what is Janet's entrance?
I mean, you kind of did it right there. It's truly just like, it's like a step and slide, slide whistle.
Bing, bing.
Star Watcher reporting for duty, Captain, and I will be right here behind you at every moment at all times today.
The captain winks.
John catches the wink.
Puts it in his pocket.
And then there is another blast of horns, signaling that the ceremony is beginning. There is a table that has been set up, a long table that stretches in front of this furnace that has been stoked up, with two, you know, large and imposing chairs set at either side. Sifa and Orimar begin their procession together to step to either side of this table. Some cultural leaders of Ungoni come out. The Uhai step up. One of them unwraps a loaf of bread and cuts it in half. The other pours into two saucers some honey and tops it with a little bit of vinegar and stirs that up. And the last pours out some wine and puts it into two cups. And these two parts of this meal are presented at either side of the table. We can see as Sifa is taking her seat, that she sits in a chair a little awkwardly as Sifa comes from the Rakshari culture, which they don't care for chairs. They're more of a cushions on the ground sort of folk. And Sifa has wide hips and, you know, a body that's just not built for chairs most of the time. But being a dignified bandit queen, still sits down without letting on too much of how frustrating the experience is. Orimar takes his seat with the dignity and grace one would expect of a king. When they are both seated, they show the bread to the crowd, dip the bread into the honey and vinegar, and take a bite. It is delicious. I recommend everybody try this at home with all the sourdough that they're baking 24/7 nonstop because we're in the pandemic times, baby. And they each take a sip of the wine. And with that, there is another blast of horns. One of the Uhai stands up and in Ungoni begins to call out basically a speech about coming to a table and sharing food and how that is in the spirit of friendship in Ungoni. And this speech is a perfect time for Jonnet to break away, I think.
Yeah, I feel like as that's happening, Jonnet is very much like, and he's doing the mental math of like where he's got to go, where he is now. And he's also kind of like scanning the crowd for grace. I guess my question is, does he see her?
Yes. Oh, okay. Yeah. She is easy to pick out for you because you just need to flicker your eye open a tiny bit to locate her. You know, it's like a bright flare in a dark wood. Like, she's there.
Yeah.
Unignorably.
Yeah, he does like a quick flicker. And then at this point, he's like, oh, there she is. And then he has a moment of like, is this going to ever be too much? Just not being able to really focus on anything else when she's around. So then he kind of does like a quick hand wave. And then as the guy goes on, he's like, and the fourth meaning behind the bread is that it is,
yes,
fluffy and whole, like friendship. And like he gives like a nod to Grace. And then they kind of like both duck out of frame. And then we see like a sort of like a more overhead shot of like the crowd, and we see people getting bumped and pushed, but we never see John. We see just see the top of Jonnet's like hair as he like moves through the crowd. And then
hell yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think you have far to move because I like the idea that overlooking this area, there is a high rooftop where instead of like the kind of droning processional music that we hear here, there are drums. You know, they are lighter drums. And this is some music that Arnie has to do, so I don't want to mention too many instruments in it. But there is this, you know, cool kind of proto banjo doing a tune that blends rhythm and melody closely together. And we can see these brightly dressed teens, cool teens of Ungoni dancing. And while there is kind of a lightness to it, it is a slow and very fluid song. Like, the dancing here doesn't have a lot of like popping or stopping. Each move flows into the next move. And they punctuate different moments in the song by flicking open these gliders and catching the wind to like spin and dance above the rooftop before gently touching down. And we can see playing this proto banjo instrument around these teens, there is a man who looks like he is in his 70s. He's got a wild shock of natural hair with like a silver streak in it. He is smiling and really feeling the music that he is playing right now. And everybody like around it is kind of like, yeah, this older gentleman is just hanging out at this cool teen party and laying down some sick tunes.
I love the flavor of just like doing the pan out from like the wide crowd, and then like in moving backwards we see like feet moving around, and then that becomes the scene of like the teens, and then we get some flavor shots of like our old guy, and then we see like Jonnet kind of like climbing to the top, making his way to the top, and just kind of taking this all in, and maybe just like hanging on the old guy for a second, where it's like that doesn't feel like, and then the old guy like looks at him and just gives him like a hey, it's pretty good though, right? And so then Jonnet comes in and is like, all right, are we here to dance, or? And then he rips off his sleeves, and then like he like throw like with one finger like touches down the glasses from his forehead to his eyes. Or are we here to glide?
The teens like erupt in applause and like cheers of like yeah. And then
over his shoulder he turns to Grace. I have no idea what I'm doing.
Well, you haven't vomited yet, so I'd say you're doing quite well.
I'm not far off.
Doing great.
With this, Johnny is in the air, and she like kind of gracefully steps down into a bit of a bow, and you can see like the glider has extended on her arm, and she flicks her fingers in and it retracts into like its gauntlet. Goes, well, Johnny, I'm so glad you managed to come out and meet us. Everybody, this is Johnny. This is a kid I told you about earlier. He's on the Uhuru, and he's a star watcher for real.
Prove it.
And
there's one.
Wait, even here we have British orphans, is what you're telling me?
No, I'm a British teen. You can tell my voice is lower in it.
Yeah, I could tell instantly.
Johnny, who's your cool teen Sona? I want Johnny and Liz to describe their cool teen Sonas.
His name is Squash. He's just a little bit built like a rectangle, and sometimes he swallows his words a little bit when he gets nervous.
My name is Wes. God, I went to school with Squash, didn't I? And I wear tight jeans and a leather jacket with a wide collar and lots of spikes. And I've got real slick black hair parted on the side.
Okay. So you've like got this look where you've either straightened or like you're wearing enough wax to like kind of straighten down your hair. That's... Okay, so yeah, clearly one of the things that we do know about Ungoni culture is that if you were part of Ungoni culture and left before the city took to the air, you are always welcome back. So the cool teen Sonas that Johnny and Liv have described have clearly lived a life outside Ungoni, and like they've moved back and they've got a Disney style sitcom that's all about their lives as sort of cool fish out of water in their new flying city home. And there are a lot of fun adventures. I can see them being like back to back, like nodding and shrugging a little bit at
it's
like, this
Ngon
are our crazy
Wee.
Lives.
Ngonwe.
Yes, Ngonwe.
Only available on Campaign Plus.
But like the crowd like quickly comes down and like gathers around Jonnet, and Johnny notices quickly as she looks aside, oh, you brought a friend.
Yeah. And
you from the Uhuru too? You a pirate? Grace like steps forward and like just nods, but you know, it's clear that she's a little shy, and it sounded like Tyler was going to do some introducing before I cut him off.
You're great. That's on Zoom. Yeah. She's not on the Uhuru, but she's on the glass, and she's another star watcher.
Like Grace pauses and sweats and like, she is not a star watcher.
Oh, wait, no? Did I hear wrong?
No, the Morrigan is the star watcher for that crew.
Damn, I got it. Okay, she's another star watcher. Wait, No, not true. Hang on. Misheard that. Which one are you again?
But they're like, you feel it. There's a part of you knows that she's a star watcher or knows how to do it. But your mind is caught in two places. You're having trouble remembering what the present is and what the future is. And it's because the future is so loud on her.
That's
it's overwhelming.
Super cool. No. Okay. No, I heard that wrong. She doesn't do that yet. I don't know what I mean by that. She's great. Introduce yourself. Do you have a last name?
She steps forward. I'd be Grace O'Malley. Pleasure to meet you all. Jonnet said something about gliders. And with that, all of the cool teens exchange smirks, and we're about to show people how to skateboard. Scotty Jacks.
Everyone's calling themselves Star Watchers. I'll call myself a Star Watcher. My name's Squash. I'm a Star Watcher. Look at the stars right now. What about you?
I'll be a Star Watcher too, innit?
I see a Star 1, I count it. I see a Star 2, and I count it again.
Hey, I'm
and then I see a third star.
Music. I watch stars.
Campaign Skyjacks is a one-shot network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter at @CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing. You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com. Like The Broadswords. The Broadswords is an all-women D&D podcast focused on drama, roleplay, and subverting stereotypes. Join the Broads as they unravel the mysteries of the snowy Rashomon, a land ruled by witches, steeped in superstition. Berserkers reign, and spirits roam the frozen wastes. Ylaris, Keela, and Maypri all have their own reasons for journeying north, but soon they discover they have something in common. They are pawns in a divine plot. You can find The Broadswords on iTunes, Google Play, or your favorite podcast app. Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @Liz_... or on her podcast, Paired. Travis Madigo was played by Johnny O'Mara, who can be found on Twitter at @JohnnyInBriefs or on his podcast, Dilettante Ball. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my other podcast, One Shot. The original music featured in this production was composed and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find Arnie on Twitter at @ArnePArrott. And you can find more of his work at atptunes.com. This episode was edited by Casey Tony, who can be found on Twitter at @CaseyPony, spelled CaseyPony, or on his own podcast, Neoscum. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at @FionaPup. The world of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and the card game Illimat, property of Together Studios. The game used in this production is a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system that was created by a talented group of game designers who were fired by a private equity firm owning Fantasy Flight Games. There are no kings. Take flight, heroes.
Strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.